This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Coulter from Basketball Victoria, joined this week by the high-performance coach for the Vic Country Men, Nathan Cooper-Brown. Welcome, Coops.
Good to see you, Rob.
And joined as well by the high-performance coach for the Victoria Country Women, Zoe Carr. Welcome, Zoe.
Thank you for having me.
We have got you two in the midst of a two-weekend off schedule, so I'm expecting high energy
what's
here.
What's that word?
Yeah, week no idea.
End?
Yeah, I just went and laid on a basketball court all weekend.
Just missing it a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, it was just, it
absorbed
was
the sun,
yeah.
Like you feel energized yeah. And your soul is full now. But it's rare, in all honesty, just to have you both obviously not around on weekends. But of course, there's a lovely little patch coming up where I don't think you're going to see a weekend off in a month and a half.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of the swings and roundabouts of junior sport. And I'm sure there's plenty of coaches sitting there saying, yeah, we get that too. We all get it. It's just how this rolls. So you can obviously get in touch with us via email on the Basketball Victoria socials. You can use the handle on Twitter now at Talking Split. So we do actually have our own Twitter handle, believe it or not. So you can stop complaining that I don't check the hashtag Talking Split. You can now get us at Talking Split, and I'll actually get a notification on my phone this time through. So look at this for progress.
Yeah. And Rob has a deep-seated need to be popular. So if you could go and follow, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's so deep-seated to the point where I just stop caring. Like it's just you go searching for affection and attention from anyone, and when you don't get it at home, what do you do? Like you've got to just hope that those in the Twitter world look after you in that space. But you can obviously follow along with that with the handle at Talking Split on Twitter. I believe it's the same on Instagram. Not that I think there's anything up on Instagram yet. So if you can give that a follow or just throw the coaching assist and send that out there to other people, that would be fantastic. So we are talking about assistant coaching in particular today. We were just talking before we got started about, I think we mention assistant coaches in pretty much every podcast at least once, probably up to half a dozen times over the course. We've never really done an episode on Talking Split about what an assistant coach should be, how they should act, who you would go and get, what the roles would be, those types of things. So it is one of those areas that is vital. I know personally I would not coach a team if I didn't have an assistant. That's just kind of my unwritten rule, to the point where it's probably written now, even in any job I was going to take, I would absolutely say, who's the assistant coach? Do you have someone in mind? Those types of things. So, Coops, how would you go about finding an assistant coach in the first place? Depending on the level you're coaching at, obviously, it changed a little bit, but what would the first steps in your path be?
Yeah, if I couldn't get someone I already had a previous relationship with, obviously that's usually the best place to start. You know, you usually have someone that you love talking basketball with or is keen to get into coaching, and you know, usually have that relationship prior. But maybe if you're not in that position, I know what I've done in the past with some NBL1 teams and Siebel teams, I've actually gone to the director of coaching and said, hey, look, I'm looking for a second assistant or even a third assistant. Who you got in the club? You know, who's really excited about getting into their coaching? Who's maybe looking for some opportunities to work on a higher level? Who's really proactive? Who's really passionate? You know, who wants to maybe progress their coaching by starting to look at some video or some different things like that? And have ended up, and making some really cool connections that way and adding people to the staff. So, highly recommend touching base with those directors of coaching around you and just seeing, you know, who's out there, who's passionate, who wants to be involved.
And there's usually a lot of people that haven't put their hand up for fear of, I'm not at that level yet, and it sort of takes someone to say, actually, come on in. I think you could be okay. What about you, Zoe? How would you go about searching out for an assistant?
So if I was more at, say, the VJBL level, I'd actually go to the director of coaching again, make sure depending on the age. So if I'm coaching, say, 12s or 14s, I'd actually go and try and look for a recently graduated junior. So they've just come out of mostly 18s. I know under 20s is a thing, but, as soon as they're done with that real high-level sort of competition in the 18s and find the you can spot them a mile away. I say often I'll finish a session and I'm like, she's going to be a coach.
Yep.
You know, like if definitely. She wants to be, she's going to be a coach. Go find those kids and get them in as early as you can, especially with the younger age groups, particularly in 12s, because it is all about teaching and it is all about patience, but it's also finished earlier in the night too, so they can then kick on and do what they want to do. But that's probably where I would look to first if I could. If I've got the older age groups, then, you know, do we have senior teams that have athletes that are looking to, you know, take that next step into coaching once their career is done, you know, try and, you know, I guess different little ways to try and find coaches, but it's not easy. It's, you know, we don't just have like an AC tree that sits out and we can just go and pick what we want. So sometimes you've just got to get whoever you're able to get, whoever's available and willing to do the job.
When you say that we don't have an assistant coach tree that just sort of sits there, it is something that we probably should be investing a little bit into at club and association level. That can we do some junior development or some junior coach development in particular with kids that are still in under 16s and under 18s and having them start to think about it? Like, it's one of the things I talk about a lot when we go to develop or sort of deliver coaching courses is, well, great that you're at a coaching course, so tick the box straight away. Go and do a referees course as well. Like, just go and see it from the other perspective. And, you know, you don't have to follow through with it, but as long as you can understand what the ref is saying, how they would understand it, those types of things, I think there's a lot of value there. So I don't think it's a case of we have to wait until they're done with their playing, so to speak, before we can start planting that seed of actually maybe assisting would be a good thing for you. Like, I think it will help their playing as well.
Yeah, well, I often think back and I think I wish I had have coached while I was still playing. The things that I'm a far better shooter now than I was when I actually played, because the amount of time I've spent teaching shooting, my technique is better. I'm not going to say it's good, but it's better. But one of the things I think is really important too, just to go off on a little bit of a tangent, I guess, is...
Wouldn't be a podcast without it, so no problem there.
What are we, 6 minutes in?
Yeah.
Is showing that those options are there and that they're available, because one of the things when I did finish, and I've spoken about it on the pod before, I've definitely written about it. One of the things I really struggled with when I finished WNBL, and I finished for a few reasons, but one of the main ones was I saw that there was probably not a spot for me left in the league in the way that the athletes were changing. So at my height, like 5'11 and a little bit, I was a 4. Like the tides were turning, and I wanted to finish the game while I was still happy with it and happy with how I was playing and my performance and all those sort of things. So I stepped away from the game, and then I went through a real attack of identity. I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't know where I was, you know, if I wasn't a basketballer, who am I, all that sort of stuff. And it was really hard.
You just lacked stress in your life and thought coaching?
No, it actually went the other way. I had nothing to do. Like, it was – I'd spent since I was, you know, 6 years old – I had somewhere to be. I had people that relied on me. I had, you know, work to do. I had something I enjoyed and something I loved, and all of a sudden that's gone. And so I just felt lost. I was lost. And I think if we can expose players, and that's – I wasn't even a good player. Like, imagine the ones that go off to Olympics and World Cups and stuff. And
she's
then
looking at me
and
she's saying this as if I was a very good player. And, like, I'm not like you. It's like, no, other way. Like,
no,
very
but,
much the other way.
You know,
way.
You think about those that have that where they're full-time in it, and it's, you know, and then that's gone, you know, how they sort of feel. So that can then go the other way, I think, of a similar thing for athletes that, you know, VJBL might be the end of their playing career, you know, and you think, what now? And so if we can expose them to the fact that there are these avenues for them to stay in the game, continue with their competitive edge, continue with a game that they love and that's been such a big part of them, I think it's a great thing, not only for them, but also then for the sport.
Yep. I think too, Rob, also to have the assistant coaches and coaches not be shy in becoming leaders a little bit earlier on. I think that we see a lot of potentially like timid type behavior, especially from our younger up and coming coaches. And I'm definitely directing this out to my Country Vic men, you know, state assistant coaches, is, you know, you don't have to wait to get to like that level to start finding assistance for yourself or starting to develop coaches for your club or to bring through the Country Vic pathway or the Vic Metro pathway, whatever it may be. Is that, you know, you're exhibiting positive attributes. You have something to give. You have something to share. Don't wait. You don't have to wait. You don't have to feel like you've got to get to a high performance coach type level before you can start being more of a facilitator and a proactive coach developer.
Yep. And I mean, I think back immediately to the under 12 Jamboree up in Echuca. Like the crop of coaches we had there was obviously excellent across the board. But the amount of young coaches we had that were putting their hands up and had probably been through that pathway themselves as a player. And I was like, oh, I remember playing Jamboree, whatever year it was, for Pioneers or Bushies, Goldies, whatever the case may be. But it's so great to have so many young people coming back and trying to tip in. And not that we're trying to retire anyone before their time. Like, if you can keep playing, please don't walk away from it. But it is one of those areas too where coaching can make you a better player. So if you're of that younger crop, I do think there's a lot to learn there about. If you have to go and teach a nine-year-old kid how to close out and defend the dribble penetration, it's probably going to make you better because you're actually going to understand how frustrating it is for your coach for a start, but you're going to actually understand why they need to be lower, like in stance, why they need to have more hand pressure, those types of things too. So I think it can actually make you a really good player, and not that we're trying to pigeonhole all up-and-coming assistant coaches to the youth that are currently playing, but it is one of the main areas that we tend to get a lot of assistant coaches from. And I mean, if you are someone out there that wants to get involved with it, there's probably someone within your club that is a well-respected coach that has pretty good knowledge, that has a pretty good handle on all things basketball anyway. Go and approach them. Like, be proactive in that. Mm. Don't wait to be asked, because we obviously have it a lot in the sport. We kind of sit back and we wait for someone to come and ask us, and it's like, well, maybe I should go and be a little bit responsible for my own journey with this and go and seek out mentors or other coaches or whatever the case may be.
And if you're not sure who those coaches are in your particular country, in that region of yours, reach out to us and we'll put you in touch with, you know, who we believe could help you on your journey. But it is also, from a statistics point of view and a data point of view, we do have to do a better job, particularly of female coaches, of tapping them on the shoulder and getting them involved, just because of psychology and the way we're wired and all those sort of things. Again, I think I've bleated on and on about this I don't know how many times on this pod, but we do need to say, hey, I think you'd be good at this, you know, come down, see what you think. And all it takes is that one I know that's what got me with when I started in under 12s, that first kid to dribble with their left hand and then make shoot a left hand layup, didn't even go in. That was it. I was hooked. And so, you know, you don't necessarily have to be starting at that, you know, NBL 1 level and above, you know, or state teams and above. You know, there's places you can start earlier, younger, less pressure. You know, it's all about the teaching and those sort of things. And until you find your feet and start to gain that confidence, and then, you know, if you feel you want to move through, then you can. And if you don't, that's okay too. It's okay to be a great under-12s coach. There's nothing wrong with that at all. Or a great under-12s assistant coach, you know. What I'd like to see more of is some of our more experienced coaches, not necessarily older coaches, but more experienced coaches saying, instead of saying, okay, I'll coach you, assist me, saying, right, you're coaching and I'm assisting you. And so I know one of the most valuable experiences I had in my early coaching career was when you assisted me, Rob, and you let me fall over on parts where it wouldn't impact the group or impact the team or the season or anything like that. So you let those happen, but you caught me before I fell on things that, you know, would impact, like could cost us in some way.
You give me far too much credit there. There's a big chance I just missed stuff.
Shut up. But that's, I think that's really valuable. Like, sometimes you got to sit back and go, okay, I can see I could fix this. I'm going to let this happen because it's not going to have any detrimental impact. And then we can talk about how to avoid that again and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, having that safety net there, though, of, you know, if this is going to be DEFCON 5, if I make this sub or this timeout and have someone be, maybe not. Or more often than not, it was when I was learning more so when to call timeouts, and I'd wait and then I'd turn around and it's like, oh, timeout's being called. Should have called it. But it's that sort of stuff. Like, put them out there and make them own the team and then just be there. I think there's a lot more learning that can go into it. Obviously do your time as an assistant coach and things like that, but I'd love to see more mentors assisting whilst the coach is, you know, learning their craft.
And it's all care, no responsibility.
That's great. Assistant coach is the best job in the world.
I gave them that option. I suggested that to them. Their head coach didn't want it. It's on them. I go home, I don't have the same level of stress. Like, I know when I was an assistant coach, a refereeing call that wouldn't go our way, I was over in like 0.2 of a second when I was assisting. But if I was the head coach, I'd hold on to that thing for like 3 days afterwards. Like, it was amazing how often that happened. But it's one of those areas too where, you know, you do – it is a unique role as an assistant coach. Like, for me, I feel like I'm a better assistant coach than I'm a head coach because I feel like I can kind of adapt to whoever the head coach is. There are some people that need, like, Cranky Rob. And Zoe, you're obviously fairly familiar with Cranky Rob over the years. Yep. Yeah.
He's a weekly feature.
Yeah, but there are others that kind of need Happy Rob. And so I can adapt to that. Like, got some thoughts for you. But there are – some other times where you don't have to be that. And that's, in all honesty, that's one of the best traits an assistant coach can have, I think, is their ability to adapt to who the head coach is. Mm. And it's not always as simple as I'm going to know the person I'm working with or someone else might just not get along with the other people, whatever the case may be. But you have to kind of fill in the gaps, I suppose, as the assistant coach with the head coach. And because what are some of the best traits in your mind that assistant coaches have to have? Like, what do you have to be a good assistant coach?
Proactive, that's a big one. I think a lot of assistant coaches, especially as they start climbing that little bit higher, is where they get caught out in starting to, again, maybe be a little bit apprehensive because, you know, they're climbing quite quickly, which is great, credit to them. But then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, I better not do that because I haven't been asked. And now all of a sudden it's a very slippery slope to like, hey, you know, I needed this, 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 and this done, or more importantly, maybe just getting a few things done. Hey, coach, I'm not sure if you need this, but here's, you know, a shot chart for our last three games. Like, you know, that sort of proactivity can go a long, long, long way. The other one would be solution focused. Be solution focused. Nothing ticks off a head coach more than an assistant coach jumping up and identifying the poor thing that's happening.
We're getting beaten on the on ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
We've given up 3 offensive rebounds in the last 3 trips. Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I missed that one.
Really?
Yeah. Can you not see the steam coming out of my ears? Yeah. I'm acutely aware of that statistical fact. Like, you bang on though. Like, you've got to bring something to the table. Like, we've been beaten on the on ball the last 3 times. Have you thought about switching our coverage? That can go a long way. Yeah, to something else.
Yeah.
Like, to whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, and then, you know, and then obviously there's another level to that in terms of your understanding of the game and being able to break that down further, not only in the moment, but, you know, perhaps, you know, through film or whatever it may be after that. The other one probably goes within itself is, you know, being detail orientated, but probably a step further with that, and this doesn't matter what level it is to have that growth mindset and really invest in not only your development as a coach, but just your understanding of the game. You know, go and watch film, go and watch other games, go and watch other coaches, and you know, just build that data, build those attributes, build that passion, that love for the game, and very quickly, and almost not surprisingly, the impact that it'll have on your ability to coach and communicate and do all those sorts of things is massive. So those are probably the big ones from me.
Yep. What about you, Zoe?
I think a really on top of what Coops has already said, a really big one is staying on message with your coach, your head coach. So I see sometimes assistant coaches fall down because they have their own ideas and messages, which is fine. Everyone's allowed to have their own philosophies and things like that. But at the end of the day, the head coach is the one that's put themselves out there. This is their group. They're running the show. So there's nothing worse than, like, I've heard of coaches who have been unavailable for a practice or a game and the assistant coach coming in and changing the offense. Like, that's just, it's just like 101, assistant coach 101.
How'd you get it? I filled in. Oh, yeah, how did it go? Yeah, really well. We put in a 1-2-2 press.
Yeah.
It's like, well, they haven't done that before.
Well, I had that. I actually had that experience, exact experience, when I was coaching the under 12s, and I had a wedding I had to go to, and So I had somebody fill in for me, and I was strict full court man. That's all we played. The only time we'd change up would be to go to a half court man if we're low on numbers. Otherwise, it was full court man. And then I get to practice on the Sunday, and my team says, oh, can we do that press that we did on Friday? And I wasn't very impressed. But that's the sort of thing, you know, your head coach needs to be able to have faith that you're staying on message with what they're doing. Otherwise, that head coach is not going to use you at all, and you're just going to be wasting your time being at practice, being at games, all those sort of things. And the same goes for, you know, especially as you get into sort of senior basketball space and you're assisting, and if athletes come to you for a bit of a whinge, like, you got to be really careful how you handle that, because you cannot be seen to be siding with them over the head coach. You shouldn't be keeping secrets from the head coach, but you also need to manage the trust that they've had to come and speak to you.
Correct. Of their problem.
So it's a real delicate balance of making sure you handle that in the right way.
Yeah, so a couple of the notes I had down, obviously personality. Like, you have to have some personality as an assistant coach. You don't want to be the overbearing personality, because that's not your role, but you do need to be able to have a laugh with the, like, know when to try and talk your head coach off the ledge a little bit when you they're about to get a tech here. I'll just let it happen. No, you've got to be able to try and circumvent that one as best you can. Exactly what you're talking about there, Zoe. You need to have some personality with your players. Like, let you be the sort of the bridge between the two. They might be fearful or intimidated by the head coach. If they're also fearful or intimidated of you, there's going to be just a massive disconnect with that group. The consistency in terminology and the program direction, like, you've got to be on the same page, head coach and assistant coach. You have to know where you're going, how you're going to get there, what you're going to tick off along the way. The balance with the head coach demeanor, like, we talk about good cop, bad cop a lot with the dynamic there. You don't want two bad cops. And conversely, you probably don't want two good cops. Like, there needs to be a balancing act between the two. It doesn't mean that you'll only ever be one type of role, but you need to be able to play off each other a little bit there, I feel like. You have to be a phenomenal communicator and problem solver. Like, it's just the first, like, you're not in that position where you're, and I see it with assistant coaches a lot. I think they spend a lot of time watching the same thing the head coach is watching. Like, and the head coach tends to watch the ball because that's where all the action is, but there's no point in the assistant coach watching the ball either. Like, at the same time, like, watch off the ball. Go and find some other things that can be helpful there. You need to have a niche skill set, I think, and Coops. Film.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that a good assistant coach is across. If you can't video edit and pull out film when you need to, you know, you've got to invest some time in that, I feel like. Got to be trustworthy as an assistant coach. Like, you're going to have some fairly frank conversations with your head coach that you obviously don't necessarily want getting out into the general playing group. So I think that trustworthiness things have to stay in the vault there. And you've got to shelve the ego. Like, it's not about you as the assistant coach. I hate to tell you this, assistants, but it's just not about you. You're not the one that everyone looks at when things are going poorly. You can have all the opinions and decisions and all those sorts of things in the world, but at the end of the day, it's the head coach with backside on the line when it really matters. Yeah. So you've got to be really careful there as to you're not going in for your benefit.
Yeah, and just don't add to the plate. There's enough on the head coach's plate. Don't add to it. You know, your job is to take things off of it. And so, you know, that might be if a head coach has set out a session plan, and in this particular activity, your job is to, let's say it's a defensive activity, and your job is to be on top of hand pressure. We don't want you then talking to the offense about what they're doing. Stay on task, because that now becomes adding to the plate of the head coach, who now has to come and remind you about what your role is. And so then that activity, you get something out of, or what you're looking to achieve out of that activity. It's never thrown to you, oh, you manage this, to get you out of the way. There's a reason for it. You know, there's points of emphasis that they want to achieve, and by you managing that particular task within the activity is going to help us get to there. So, you know, staying on task with that and just, not adding to the plate is really big.
Yep. So, we'll start with you on this one, Zoe. How would the makeup of a staff look on your end? Like, would you just say, we'll go senior coaching for argument's sake to start off with, and then we'll talk juniors as well. What would the makeup of a staff look like for you? What sort of roles would they have? How many people would you have? Those types of things.
I tend to have no more than two assistant coaches. I think that's probably maybe even a weakness of mine, but once you start to get into more than that, I don't – I'm probably not capable of trusting more than two at any one time. So, yeah, talking split psychology with Zoe. I think it's – yeah, two is probably the sweet spot for me. And it depends on obviously who they are. I want somebody – my lead assistant coach is someone I trust with my life. You know, it's somebody I know is going to stay on task. They're high basketball IQ. They're a good communicator. But they also understand that – pretty much everything we've said already that, you know, the end of the day – it's my job on the line. So, you know, if you need to make those calls, they don't get offended by those sort of things. So my second assistant is generally someone a bit more up and coming that I want to try and give an opportunity to, and not to say that they're to sit there saying nothing, but it's more, you know, depending on their level, sometimes I'll have them deliver their messages or ideas through that lead assistant first so they can decipher and see if it you know, if they're at a level where, you know, I trust them as much as I trust the lead assistant coach, well, then I won't have that process in place. But if they're, you know, earlier in their journey, then it's sort of, hey, when we're in the throes of it in a game, just run your idea past the lead head coach, assistant coach, sorry, first, and they say yay or nay. And they start to learn as well how to then make those quick, you know, it's got to be almost like a GIF, I guess, when you're coming up and you're giving somebody no more than 6 seconds, you know, like you've got to come up and it's got to be this, bang, like an out. And you, last thing you can do as a head coach is sit here waiting for you to get to the point. And I think by making that process of going through the lead assistant coach, if they're earlier in their journey, it helps shape that of, okay, this is how you need to deliver it and go from there. But yeah, that's generally how I operate. I think it's, I feel like head coaches at any level have a responsibility to develop their assistant coaches, particularly their second assistant. So if you have more than that, then, you know, your job or your responsibility is to make them better and try and get them to a point where then they can leave and get their own jobs. And I think sometimes people get offended by that, and I see it as an amazing thing. I think it's great, you know, that you've been able to have that impact into somebody to move on. But, yeah, I think, long story short, first assistant just – probably capable of being a head coach if you can have it, and then second assistant, somebody a bit younger in their, whether it be in their journey or of age, and giving them a real opportunity.
Yeah, what about you, Coops? What would you be looking at for a staff makeup?
Yeah, I think just importantly on the back of that, just highlighting for all of us in the coaching space, you know, to everybody listening to this, trying to find more joy in the success of others is really important for our sport, for our coaching community. Because as we've said before, you know, we don't have the same amount of jobs as the United States, you know, where guys can just move chairs and it's, you know, pretty much have a job. Yeah, we have finite jobs, but, you know, taking the time to develop someone, you know, having genuine joy in seeing them succeed, to seeing them go on to do special things and achieve dreams, you know, as a coach, search for that, find that, embrace that. It's only going to make us better. Across the board, very similar for me in terms of, I'll start quickly on a senior coach. So I would happily go down. I would go to four assistants based on what we could. So senior assistant, trust in my life, probably a close friend, can have great arguments, can, you know, have great discussion.
And not take things personally.
Not take things like, personally.
Because we've all seen it, heat of the battle.
Absolutely.
Sometimes you've got to get messages across pretty quick and the tone can be maybe a little short.
Yeah.
But it's something you have to have.
But it's also somebody that can hold you accountable too.
For sure.
Definitely. So if you do, because again, we talk heat of battle, and you do say something or fly off the handle or do something that you probably shouldn't do, an assistant coach to say, hey, that wasn't right.
Yeah.
You know, and for you to be able to then have that relationship to be able to have that conversation.
Spot on. Yep. Same again. Second assistant, I want someone coming for me. You know, I want that person that's so hungry and so passionate and so driven that they're doing anything and everything that they can to try and become a head coach. Obviously in the right way, you know, when it's, you know, that loyalty piece that we were talking about, trustworthy piece, obviously is paramount. But want that guy that's like, you know, is bleeding it, because obviously they're going to be, you know, incredible workers and proactive and so on. And then the next, you know, assistant or next would be real development coaches, and with very, very narrow parameters around, you know, what their role is and, you know, what they're bringing. It may just be something as simple as charting, you know, charting two or three things that we, you know, that we value, to go a little bit deeper. So like first assistant for me, like offensive coordinator, opposition scout and 3-point battle coach. And then the second assistant would be defensive coordinator and the opportunities and threats coach. And then we would also break up the coaching staff into positional groups. So if I only had the two assistants, so being the head coach, I'd be the guards. First assistant would be with the wings. Second assistant would be with the posts. And obviously they would have some work around that space. If I was thinking more like in a VJBL space, and usually you're only getting your one assistant for that one. Again, you know, I think there's a lot more value there to go and get that young player maybe that we were talking about, or going and getting, you know, somebody that's really interested in coaching, somebody that's really trying to develop not only their ability as a coach but their love for the game. I think having, you know, one of your best mates there or somebody, you know, that you highly value and so on, I think there's a little bit of a missed opportunity. You know, I think you can save that for later. I think having that ability to go and grab someone and say, hey, like, let's go have a season together. Like, let's go figure some stuff out. Let's go coach these kids up and really get after it, I think would be great. And again, I would then structure their roles and responsibilities around some things I thought they were good at. So obviously play to their strengths, and then obviously identify maybe one or two things where I say, okay, well, you're going to need to be a lot better in this if you want to move up the pathway. So let's also give you that and get to work together.
Yeah, I like a lot of that stuff. It's interesting, the dynamic in particular. Like I can only speak on my end. Like I had an assistant coach last year, a female. I was coaching a female team. The last thing I wanted was another male assistant coach. Like there needed to be a barrier between the two. And I was super fortunate with who the assistant coach was, and massive shout out to the team manager because she got her over the line for me. But but it was one of those things where it's like, well, for her, I needed her to be a little bit of a bridge at times between the two, which was valuable, and obviously came with an incredible amount of playing experience that translated into a coaching world too. But that was just, I needed someone that thought similar to me but would give me enough of a different take on things that I wasn't just going to be stuck in the same mindset the whole time. So you do want someone, I think, that's going to challenge you a little bit, and someone that can be a little bit direct at times. It's like, hey, we need to get out of this because this is happening, so I'd suggest this. And as a coach, you sort of sit there and go, yeah, all right, yeah, I see what you've done with that. Like, maybe not the way I'd go about it, but a different take on it. It's reassuring at times that you've got someone else that's thinking. It's not, you can't be the only decision maker as the head coach. You need some just different ideas. And like one of the, like, I mean, I'll name him because he probably doesn't listen to the podcast, like Anthony Dimas, who we worked with a number of years ago, Coops. Yeah. Like, I loved working with him because he just came at things from just like the weirdest angle at times. It's like, how have you got to there from this? And his whole thing was, just do opposite to what everyone else is doing. So, you know, just go be your own person. And it's like, well, I don't know how much I like this. But the more you spend time with him, it's like, actually, he was bloody good at this. Like, he just did a great job. He phrased it really well. And he was just a really interesting dynamic to add to a coaching staff where if everyone was saying left, he'd say right, just to even test why you were going left. Like, he didn't genuinely believe you should go right. He'd just say, oh, okay, I just want to hear your reasoning behind it. It was just a lot of fun. So I think that dynamic you can add to a coaching staff is just really valuable too.
Rob, I'm not going to let you do a story time without me jumping in.
Yep. The looks on your faces when you press that button. I wish we need to start videoing this.
Yeah, it's probably best we don't.
I won't say the level I was coaching, and I won't use names, but we were playing a tough game, getting picked apart a little bit. I sat down next to my assistant. I said, I think we got to go to a zone. and I got nothing back. You know, like a little bit of and, you know, maybe. And I was like, okay, cool. All right. 2-3 point possessions. I'm like, nah, okay. Change it to a zone. And then I think we got 2 or 3 stops in a row. And I sat down. I was like, ah, oh, next one. I was like, God, we should have gone to that zone earlier. And he turned to me and goes, yeah, I don't know. I was going to say that.
Oh.
And I was like, okay. And you could probably guess the rage meter. And where it was spiking
final
to.
Final siren went. Coop's had his stuff packed for him at the end of the bench. And just, mate, just keep walking. Like.
But obviously bring that up in back yourself.
Yep.
Yeah, back yourself. And you're going to be wrong. Like, yeah. I've been an assistant coach on at many levels and made multiple mistakes. But when talking about adding to the plate, when you're talking about, you know, understanding the game and being invested – avoid those moments, back yourself. You know, it's only going to make you better. It's only going to challenge your head coach the way they need to. So please avoid those moments, coaches.
I think a really important thing to remember as well, as an assistant coach, your job isn't only to communicate with the head coach. So mid-game, every athlete that comes off the floor needs a hit.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, there's got to be – and it could just be a, hey, great job. But the amount of times, even at the senior level – so I would sub somebody out for rotation. No other reason, but for, you know, oh, you've gone probably the last 8 minutes, let's get you a blow now. And this is seniors and they're coming out and they don't understand why they're out of the game and we have to explain it to them. You think about what then juniors are thinking. You know, that's just a mindset. They automatically think that coming out means they've done something wrong. So every athlete needs some type of feedback hit. I'd suggest to any male assistant coaches that are coaching, even head coaches, but assistant coaches that are coaching females, don't sit in front of them, sit beside them. So, or have them come sit beside you when you're delivering that feedback, because sometimes it can be seen as a little intimidating having, anybody, but particularly a male standing over them a little bit whilst delivering. You could be saying the nicest things in the world, but sometimes from a feeling perspective, it can mean they don't hear your message, whereas if you're sitting side by side, they can just keep their eyes on the game. You can just a real quick hit and then move on to the rest of the game. But I think we miss a lot of opportunities, teams that are fortunate enough to have assistant coaches, in not hitting those athletes with feedback and on every rotation.
I got and I can jump to the other side of that with another.
So stand over them, like stand, on them? Stand on
them. On them, yell at them. No, it was it's funny because going back to when Rob and I were on staff in Tamworth for, you know, Vic Metro long, long time ago. But that's exactly where I was. So I was the development coach, so basically the third assistant, was really enjoying this experience. And, you know, Rob and I roomed together, stayed up all, you know, hours of the night, like cutting film and half watching The Simpsons and the under 17 World Cup. It was pretty good.
Fun
but
times.
Yeah. But there was a moment where Jock Perry got subbed out and I was like, awesome, I've got something for him. I'm like, yes, this is really going to help him. And as he came off the floor, the head coach grabbed him, gave him something. Then the next guy grabbed him, Rob. And then the next guy, Dimmer, grabbed him something. And by the time he got to me, I just looked at him and just gave him a high five and just said, good job, buddy. And you know, and obviously let him head down to the bench and grab some water. But it was a moment of like, there's no point in me giving him something right now, because I know this is stepping on a question you've got for us later, Rob. But there's no what's been said prior to me is more important, because I need to know where I sit in – you know, on the rung of the ladder. And he's not going to take in that much information anyway. So understanding what you have, when you have it, how it relates to the game, is also a big part of that self-awareness piece as a coach in who, when and why.
And it sounds like nothing. You know, you talk about it and people think, like when I tell people to sit next to them when they're delivering that feedback, if possible, and people think, oh, come on, you know, but it can make such a difference. Even just little things, when they come out, especially if you can see they're just a little jacked, let them take a seat, let them take a drink of water, then talk to them,
yeah.
You know, because they're already up and about. Just let them have a breath and then you know, you're more likely, like you're saying, to get that message through to them. They're more likely to absorb it. They still might not like the message, and that's fine. But if we want, I talk about all the time, we want bang for buck. If we're going to coach, we want what we're saying to be absorbed as much as possible. So sometimes we have to adjust our delivery, our timing of that delivery, to, you know, maximize that bang for buck.
Yep. Well, we were going to talk about the assistant coach's role at training sessions, but you've jumped in early, Zoe, and you've gone game. So what would you have your assistant coaches doing during games? Like, what sort of roles would you give them during games? So Coop's touched on it a little bit with, like, rotation, like coordinators, those types of things, tracking. What would you have your coaches do during games?
Yeah, so I generally have a similar setup in that, you know, there's more responsibility on offense for generally the lead assistant coach, and then defense. But that doesn't mean they can't cross over, you know. So
you want collaboration in particular, don't you?
Yeah. So, you know, if my lead assistant coach, if that's somebody that I've been lucky enough to get that could potentially coach in the league themselves, I'm not going to say only watch the offense. And if they see something on the defensive end, well, no, don't talk to me about that. Like, it's, you know, I still want that, but generally their focus should be, it's just some way to give them a little bit more focus. There's always foul tracking. And I know that at the higher levels, you know, they have the paddles and sometimes they have it on the scoreboard. But again, coming back to my trust issues, I don't always, you know, sometimes that paddle can take too long to come up. So if you're relying on seeing that, then the ball may have been in. That could be someone's fourth, and now we're playing a possession of D with, you know, somebody on, what, my best player on four, and I should have taken them out of the game. So foul tracking is really important. Timeout tracking is really important, both for myself and the opposition coach. I want to know how many they've got left as well, particularly if you're in that chess game at the end. So, yeah, really important stuff there. But again, I want them to collaborate on both ends of the floor. But the message, for example, if, you know, lead assistants on offense, and the second assistant comes up with something offensively, it goes through the lead assistant because offense is their, you know, role. But in game and yeah, like as Coop said, I want to hear ideas, thoughts, ideas, all those sort of things. The last thing I want to hear is, yeah, I thought that. I was like, oh, wow. So, yeah, those and like I mentioned just before, feedback. Every athlete is to get some type of feedback when they come off the floor, and it can be as technical as an actual point, or it can even just be reassurance of how they're going. Or but they need to be hit with something every time they come off the floor.
Yep. What about you, Coos? Was there anything else in games that you would have your assistants responsible for role-wise? We spoke the other week. It's not getting you a chair.
Yeah, so not getting me a chair or not getting me a whiteboard. The 3-point battle is a really big one for me. Like I've really invested in that, like learning how that relates to being in the USA. And then obviously, you know, we're talking about country and, you know, who's the USA of nationals, you know, Vic Metro or currently Queensland, but, you know, hopefully we'll see what happens.
Don't open that door.
Yeah.
But just talk about 3-point battle for those that may not be aware.
So it's free throws made, second chance points and points off turnovers. And points off turnovers really does become fast break points.
Yep.
Yeah, with the idea that that's one of the hardest things to obviously detrans to. So knowing those three things, if we're winning that battle, we're going to put ourselves in a really good position to be successful no matter what the level. So I like to have a coach on that, just keeping an eye on that. And, you know, every now and then, hey, we're plus two, we're minus two, whatever it may be, that we can just kind of keep an eye on, you know, what that is and how it's impacting the game. You know, do we need to find ways to maybe get to the free throw line more, or, you know, reduce our turnovers, whatever it may be. Obviously the kind of that baseline monitoring of timeouts, fouls, and those sorts of things. Another one that I've done in the past on the under 17 national team was runs of scores and runs of stops. So 3 stops in a row we called a kill, and, you know, there's some good data that's been around for a long time that, you know, 3 stops in a row, if you get, you know, maybe more than 8 or 9 of those a game, you're going to put yourselves in a good spot. And again, that's the higher you go, the more the game is about a game of runs And so, you know, how you're impacting the runs is obviously is huge in that respect. So, and then the runs of scores was basically when am I going to use a timeout to break that run from the other team, and obviously depending on how much you trust your team, could be as high as 11, could be as low as 5. You know, just hearing that coming, hey coach, that's a 5-point run or that's a 6-point run is something that I've found helpful, you know, learning from one of my mentors in Justin Schuller. So that's been really good. The other one that I've also done in the past is actually have one of my assistants do the rotations. One, sometimes...
This is an interesting door to open, Coach.
Yeah.
Like, I know some coaches are very anti this, but some would bet their lives on it. So I'm curious to hear where you're going with this.
Yeah, so I've done it one of two ways. One where it's been a little bit more organic, and others where we've used a rotation map. So actually mapping out who's going to be on the floor at that time. Also, the good thing about the rotation map helps you manage minutes. And if you're talking about tournament play, that can be, you know, really helpful. It goes to that assistant that I trust. It goes to them because they've established an understanding of what we're trying to do in terms of who's on the floor and how it relates to our style and our system. But at the end of the day, I still have the override capacity. So if they went to put someone in the game and I didn't believe in that sub, I'm not just letting it happen. Like before, I've just stopped an athlete. No. You sit back down. Let's work something else out. But again, I'll take those over if I feel like that's something that I need to be, you know, really on top of. But I've felt really comfortable in the past actually having that off my plate and giving it to that coach. And I've always had some really good assistant coaches in that first chair and being like, cool, you do that. Let me focus on the other stuff. But if I've got to take it back from you, I'm going to, and it's no hard feelings. It's just, you know, the buck stops with me and that's how we go.
Yep. Do you feel you lose a little bit of control when you're not responsible for the subs, when you've given it to an assistant?
No, not in the past. Yep. There's obvious dangers with it that, yep, you know, that it could get away from you. But again, I guess I've just been quite lucky that, yep, that the people that I've been with have had such great buy-in and known me so well as a coach to understand what I'm looking for at the right time. And it would be very rarely that I've had to actually say no or you know, I'm doing it now, or, you know, get that, you know, those sorts of things. And usually more often than not, it's me wheeling around and barking at them saying, get that player off, because they've, you know, turned it over a couple of times and I'm starting to see red.
Out of all of this, there are people that think like Coops, multiple people that think like Coops. That worries me a little.
Took me a second.
Yeah,
there.
I just got like, that. Yeah. I was like, okay, yep.
No. It is something that I know there are some coaches that would swear by it. And for exactly what you're saying, like, it's just one less thing for them to have to worry about is the rotations. They can look over and they know roughly who's coming in, when they're coming in, what that sort of lineup looks like. And of course, you got that override of, look, we need to press here. Can you get me a pressing group that will be okay with it? And it works out pretty well. But there are others that are just like, no, I can't give it up, because I just feel like that's so big a part of the coaching. And I don't think it's right or wrong. Either way, it's, and everyone's got their own opinions on it. It's one of those things. But geez, if you're the first assistant, you want to make sure you get those stuff right too, don't you? Like, it's a lot to put on someone's plate too. So, all right, we've talked about in-games. Just before we go on in-games, I didn't realise that it was happening at the time until another coach highlighted it for me. But the Sydney Kings staff, so when they had a message in-game assistant coaches to the head coach, they had to write it on a post-it note and hand the post-it note to the head coach. I'd never realised it before until I was made aware of it, and then it's like the only thing I saw, which, you know, I drive a red car. Hey, look at all these red cars. It was that kind of thing. Where do you sit with that, Zoe? Like, you can go first on this, because I'm coming back to you, Coops. I haven't forgotten.
I mean, it's not something that would work well for me, so I wouldn't – it definitely wouldn't be something I would, you know, put in for my assistant coaches in a way of communication. But that has more to do with the way I absorb information as well. So if that works for that staff, fine. But that would make it harder for me to figure out what they want, I think. So just in the way that I process information. So yeah, it seems odd to me, but again, it could seem, what's odd to me is normal to others. So.
Yeah, and it might be more okay, yes, we're sending a message, but it might also be something that you want to look back on at the end of the game and go through those notes and say, well, okay, this is where they were at and this is what their thinking was at this time. Can we reflect
just
back?
Just as long as it's not a Dennis Denudo, do you want some water?
Yeah, exactly.
You know,
it's a very high quality castle reference there.
Thank you very much. No, but yeah, it just comes down to, you know, we talk all the time about with our athletes about the way they learn, process, you know, absorb information. So if that works, then I say go for it. But yeah, I just know that it won't work for me. I'd probably end up losing the or picking up the wrong post-it or dropping it or something, you know, like it'd just, yeah, it. As you can hear in my voice, it would add tension or already heightened tension.
Well, I've assisted you a few times and my handwriting is a long way from pristine. So you'd be trying to understand the hieroglyphics that have come back and it's like, what do you mean we've got to like zone press off the full court back line? Like that doesn't make sense to me.
And to be honest, I'm not a great reader at the best of times. So, in the throes of it, I don't trust my ability to read what, you know, you or anybody else has said and get it right. So I'd rather just hear it and be able to process from there.
Yep. What about you, Coops?
Yeah, same. I mean, yeah, most importantly, you do what works for you, right? You know, that they found a system that works for them and obviously they were incredibly successful doing it. So, you know, good on them. So definitely no right or wrong. And, you know, that's the beauty of our sport, that there is so much nuance to it that you can try different things and have some fun with it. But, yeah, the thought of looking down to read it, and then if I can't read the handwriting, now I'm down, my head's down for 2-3 possessions or...
And let's face it, no one is happy when they can't read someone's handwriting.
Yeah,
It triggers something in everyone.
And the last thing my assistants need is for me to be more angry with them. So if I'm already angry and then I can't read the handwriting, I'm going to a whole nother level of angry, and that's just, you know, that's just bad for everybody. I'm not this bad, everybody. I make these jokes for the pod, but... I like the idea up in my ear. I can keep watching the game. I think the other part too is, you know, I think you can have a coach like something that, you know, I like to have for my staff is to record what's been said in the timeout for that, you know, that post game, that, you know, hot review or cold review. So I think there's another way of covering that if you need to. Or the other part is having... Yeah, I like to coach the bench. I can't help myself, like in game, in that, you know, something will happen and I want to go down to the bench and turn to the bench and talk them through what we've just seen and how maybe they can avoid that mistake or exploit, you know, that advantage. And the idea of having a coach, so I would say to my lead assistant, if I'm doing that, you're the head coach. So if I'm down and talking to them, they should be up and covering what may be missed by me. And I don't know, there's just something in the back of my mind that says if we're both there with a post-it, you know, it looks like we're both like reading a map on the sideline, you know, like lost tourists. It's probably getting away from us a little bit. Yep. So
I think it also misses an opportunity to build a bit of trust is probably the wrong word, but
yeah, it's a bit of
see how we go with after I explain it, you'll probably come up with the word I'm looking for. An assistant throws out an idea, the bench hears it, the head coach does it, and it works. And that automatically ties that idea and that knowledge to that assistant coach.
Credibility.
There you go. Yep. That's what I'm looking for.
Validation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think...
Go full thesaurus here. Tune out a couple. Yeah.
But I think you miss those opportunities for that and to see that, hey, that was a great idea. And now, you know, when a feedback hit's coming... You know, now it's like, hey, you might just listen that little bit more. And, you know, like you've got that extra credibility for your assistant coach for the players to see, hey, you know, they can obviously coach too. Because if you're in the – particularly if you're in like the local sort of level, and what I mean, like, you know, the NBL 1 sort of landscape, obviously if you're in the National League or beyond, you know, you can coach.
Yeah,
yeah. For sure. But – at that NBL 1 level, sometimes, you know, the players are playing at a higher level than what the coaches are coaching in. So to be able to take those opportunities to add that credibility to your assistants or to your staff, I think it's pretty valuable.
It's something that both of you do pretty well, I think, is throw that coaching assist, is what we refer to it as. Is like if someone comes to you with an idea, you don't walk out there as if it's your idea. It's like, hey, coach came up with a great point over here, and then you deliver it, because again, some credibility straight away, the validation of it's not necessarily my idea, but it also shows that we work together as a staff. Like it's we are a unit in itself, rather than I'm the head coach, that's just the other person that stands over there. I think it's a really valuable. I'd love to see more coaches throw that assist to their assistant coaches, because one, it means your assistant coach is going to keep coming to you with stuff, because we all want the validation of, yeah, good job over there, and the attaboy, so to speak. But two, like there's buy-in now.
Mm.
Like it's everyone knows. Actually, we're all in this together. It's not just them and me.
Well, it's on the other side of that too. So the head coach has to be aware that, okay, out comes an idea, you take it on and you do it and it fails. That's on you as the head coach. That's not the assistant coach's fault. You've ultimately still made that decision, and your assistant coach needs to feel comfortable that you're going to protect them rather than blame them when that happens. So when it works, that's on them. Well done. We throw that coach assist. When it doesn't, that's on me as the head coach.
Yep. I think also too, like kind of ties into both of what you guys are talking about, but that ability to deliver a clear, concise, punchy instruction. So yes, it's going to the head coach, but that's a rep of getting the exact same instruction to your team in a timeout. So I've now got to, construct my language and get this point that the head coach can understand it in seconds. That's absolutely a skill that we need to take over as head coaches one day. So maybe there's some lost reps there too, for us to consider.
And what you're saying there too is so important of going into a timeout. One, what am I going to say to the head coach? What do they need to hear from me? Because you've only got, 6 seconds to get your message across. And do I need to, in that time, de-escalate? So, and how do I do it? So sometimes when you're in big games, there's lots of noise and you've got to yell to be heard. How do I get that message across so it can be heard, but my yelling isn't adding anxiousness or tension to that? And it's, you've got to be, I talk about it all the time as a head coach in those situations, you've got to be the face that the athletes need to see. The assistants sometimes have to be the face the head coach needs to see.
Well, and sometimes the assistant coach, you've got to take a couple of bullets too, where a player might be coming out of the game that has maybe mangled something that was not necessarily the instruction coming forward from the coach. The coach wants a piece of them on the way through and it's like, hey, I've got this one. The last thing they need is more heat, because they already probably feel bad about what's going on. Like, they're not stupid. They know what they've mucked up in that space. Sometimes you got to be the, hey, coach, see if I can distract you for long enough that player can come and take a seat where you're not going to be into them straight away. So it's that ability to read the room, for lack of a better term, as to what do they need at this point. Someone that's already made a mistake doesn't want to be chewed out as they're coming off the court, because that's probably enough of a red flag for them that I've been subbed out, I've probably mucked something up.
Yeah.
Like as the assistant, you can take that hit along the way.
And if the head coach has got to them and give him a bit of a spray, that's where your feedback hit needs to be calm, it needs to be concise, and it needs to be informative. So now we're taking away what's just happened there. We're not saying
it's wrong,
don't listen to it, absolutely, or it's wrong. Yep. But what we're going to do now is deliver it in the way that you can hear it and absorb it, and it's informative. It's not, there's no emotion in it. There's no, you're not knifing your head coach by saying, oh, it's okay, and rubbing their back.
They don't know what they're talking about. I know you're trying.
That.
Like, that's not helpful.
But you're also not piling on. So it's just got to be, hey, do you understand what they're saying? What we need is A, B, and C, and then go from there in a calm sort of way. So, because there'll be times where they come out, like you said, they're not stupid. They know what they've done, but they may not know why. And that's where you've got to get that.
Yeah, there's got to be some more nuance to it. Just making sure they actually understand it is such a key part of it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, for the fact we haven't spoken about Ted Lasso up to now is criminal from us three.
59 minutes, right? And we haven't spoken about Coach Beard.
Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, we should all be ashamed of ourselves. But one of our mentors in that space is Coach Beard, right?
Yeah.
As soon as you started saying that, I was like, oh God, he's just perfect at that.
Yeah.
They know when to jump in. They know what the head coach needs. Like, I'm not suggesting at VJBL level you need to live in each other's pockets and you need to know everything that's going on in each other's lives, but I think a valuable part of it is having a relationship away from the court with them as well. Huge. Like every now and again, just go and grab a drink or go and grab a meal or something like that. One, for the head coach to show some appreciation, because they're probably, one, getting paid more, but getting, two, getting the credit for doing a lot more than the assistant coach is. Yep. But just build that rapport and take a genuine interest in what they do away from the court as well. They're giving up a lot of their time to be involved as an assistant coach without any of the same level of credit that the head coach gets. So that investment into them, I think, is such a really important part. And it sort of leads into the next part of where I was heading with what would you have your assistant coach do at training. I am highly, highly critical, just as my baseline, but also of coaches that have assistant coaches that they don't use at training sessions in particular. That is a great time for coaches to really give them a role, give them some ownership over something. It's got to appear on the session plan. Well, who's responsible for what during this training session? What are you going to be doing? How are you going to do it? What's the terminology I want you using? If you have an assistant coach that you're not using at your training session, that's on you as the head coach. That's not on the assistant coach. You don't get to complain that, oh, they don't offer anything. Well, what have you asked for? Like, what roles and responsibilities have you given them? That's on you as the head coach. And the easiest way to lose an assistant coach is to shut them out, because they just don't come back. And that's a poor experience for them. And there's someone that has obviously put their hand up and wanted to be involved and wants to invest in themselves and into different players. But if we don't use them, why would they keep coming back?
And on the flip side, overusing them, in the sense of, like, I've seen a lot at the VJBL level, the amount of times the assistant coach is always taking the Sunday morning training because the head coach, you know, is just not turned up this time and all that sort of stuff. That's not their job. Their job is to fill in, yes, but not every week or every second week, unless that's been decided at the start of the season. So, you know, making sure that, you know, the roles are set and you know what you're supposed to be doing and what your jobs are to bring into the group, but not then just, especially I see it a lot when teams start to lose a lot and the head coach goes, oh, I can't be bothered. Ah, that my assistant coach will do it. And it's, yeah, it's unfair. It's unfair on the assistant coach to do it. And it's another, the flip side of how, another way to make sure that they don't come back.
Yep.
Yeah, too. I think there also is those, you know, roles and responsibilities being clearly labelled at the start of the season and then combined with some of that proactivity that we discussed. And so, you know, your Friday night game, I'm the rebounding coach. That's something that the head coach has given me, you know. Did I stat it? Have we filmed it? Could I clip a bunch of things, you know, and, you know, of missed box outs and then go to, you know, send the coach an email on Saturday. Hey, coach, here's three clips of us missing some box outs. Hey, on Sunday, you know, can I grab 10 minutes with the group to work on, you know, some boxing out prior to a transition activity or whatever it may be? So there's some real give and take there that should create the buy-in, that should have everybody coming into those sessions, those practice sessions, really motivated, you know, with some clear understanding of what we're trying to achieve and, you know, and who's got the responsibility to drive it.
Yeah, and it's funny how often you hear assistant coaches, they sort of stand on the sidelines where you see them and they're just talking to the parents. It's like, yeah, that's not really what you're there for. Like, you're supposed to be there to help the athletes. Like, stay away from the parents as long as you can. Obviously, put out some fires and check in if you need to go down that path as well. But have a real clear role at your training session. Don't stand next to the coach at training for a start. It is one of the best bits of advice I can give young assistant coaches for a start. Like, yes, to start off with, maybe it's a good thing to do to understand what the head coach is looking for or seeing. You get the right message so that then you can go and do your thing. But once you're comfortable with that, don't stand next to the head coach. Try and box your players in a little bit between the two of you and work out ways where they're constantly getting tagged with feedback on the way through. They've got someone they can talk to really easily if they don't understand the drill that you're going through or whatever the case may be. But it's that stuff at training as well. Like, you have to be just there more than anything else and be there for the players, because they're really the ones that feel it the most, I feel.
Yeah, and don't make anything up. If a player turns to you and says, aren't I supposed to do this? And you're not sure, go find out. Because
and don't say, I don't know. Say, I'll double check.
Mm,
yeah.
And then go find out and give them the right answer, because you just know the very next possession, they're going to do what you've told them to do. And if it's wrong, the head coach is going to come down on them and then they're going to look at you and a lot of that relationship's then in a bit of trouble. Mm. So, you know, just you don't need to – nobody expects everybody to know everything. And sometimes, like, there's been things that I've been so on top of, an athlete's turned and said, you know, aren't I supposed to do this? And in that moment I've gone, I can't even – I know this and I can't remember. You know, like, it's just
yeah. –
you know, and particularly for coaches in the VJBL who've spent a whole week at work, you know, and it's been draining and mental, sometimes those things happen. So, you know, just there's nothing wrong with saying, hey, I'll just find out or I think so, but let me double check. And go double check that and make sure they're getting that right information. It goes so much further than just guessing.
Circling back to what you were talking about before, Rob, about, you know, corralling the court and where you're standing and so on. So, you know, I would challenge coaches this week to, you know, have on the back of their practice plan and or you'd like to think that every assistant coach has something to write on and something to write with at every game, at every practice, is, you know, have a bit of a grid. So if you've got a 10-minute activity where you're maybe 3-on-3 defending the cut, you know, just monitor, you know, how many times did you change your angle or, you know, how many times – or even maybe create a grid on the back with, you know, all your 10 players and then you've got your segments and then every time you give an athlete a bit of feedback, just give them a tick. Are you going to the same players all the time? How many players did you go to an activity? Don't have to do it every session. You know, not trying to add to the plate where you got to be, you know, analysing yourself that deeply every time, but just a good check-in to be like, okay, am I corralling the court? Am I changing my coaching angle? Am I looking for different things? Am I getting touch points with all the athletes? Because, you know, do that a few times and all of a sudden you'll just become a lot more aware of it and, you know, add it to your, you know, to your coaching ability.
Yep. And if you're an assistant coach that is at a training session and you find yourself having to say the same thing to the same player over and over again, that might be time to go to the head coach and say, hey, look, I keep having to say this. Either they don't understand or they're not capable of it. We need to spend a little bit more time around this for that player in particular because it is a great way of tracking. Look, am I miles off the mark with this or is this a real problem? Because players don't often put their hand up and say, yeah, I'm struggling with this or I don't understand it. They want to try and skate through as best they possibly can. You know, love them to death, but you know, they don't always give a lot the other way about, I don't understand this. They don't want to put their hand up for that. But, I mean, assistant coaches in particular, for mine, really dial in on the player development at training sessions. Like, don't worry about that's not what our offense or our defense is supposed to look like. Really drill in on the actual skill set itself and focus on that. Like, I think that is a really critical area that often gets lost. I mean, head coaches will spend a lot of time on the tactical side of things in particular. But as an assistant coach, I think you can jump in and really try and fill the other gaps in what's going wrong. Like, yes, they might be in the right place at the right time, but their positioning with where their hand should be and where their footwork should look like is not correct. So you can drill in on that a little bit more and you can get a lot of win out of that, I feel.
Well, and that's those where you take those notes of, you know, coming off this. I saw it on Sunday at the under-18s Country Women had a practice game.
So you didn't have a weekend off?
No. but there was a particular cut that they were making and had they done the work a little bit earlier with their footwork, they would have had a wide open catch and shoot every time they came off that cut. So I was able to then say to Hayden as the head coach, hey, work on that footwork, you know, and he's now put it into – you know, when they're doing some shooting stuff or just warm up, that's the footwork that they're working on. So it doesn't have to be, you know, this mind blowing, have to make up a whole new drill, but it can just be little things that you can adjust and look for within your session to be able to make those adjustments as an assistant coach because you've noticed that detail because that's what your eyes are on.
Yeah, just doubling down on that because I think this is so important for skill development for our coaches, like, you know, just, you know, make sure you go back and listen to this twice, coaches, but the utilization of games approach to teaching and constraints led approach to teaching that we're finding is so incredibly valuable. This is where you assistant coaches can really tap into making that the best way to teach. And it's exactly what you guys have been talking about. So, you know, you're in an activity, you know, maybe it's 4-on-4 and, you know, we're doing whatever it may be. And through that games approach, an athlete solved a problem by throwing a behind-the-back pass. So in that moment, they solved the problem with that pass. That's what felt comfortable to them. It's what they saw. The decision was great, but the execution was poor. You know, they threw it into the foot of their teammate, whatever it may be. Write it down. Write it down at the end of practice. Go grab that athlete. Hey, Rob, remember back when we were doing front-on offense and you threw that behind-the-back pass? Man, love that pass. Wonderful creativity. Great problem-solving. What was the execution of the pass? Like, oh, you know, it was crap. Or, you know, hit him in the feet. It's like, no, it's no.
He's channeling me into the floor.
Well, it's like, here's your challenge for the week. You've got to go and throw 100, you know, 200 behind-the-back passes to the wall or to your brother or sister or whatever it may be to develop that skill that you successfully created in that moment of decision. And so, you know, now with the whole thing is really tying in together. So I think the more we can do of that in terms of that note-taking, that monitoring, that analysis, you know, and that individual development through the assistant coaches when we're in more macro-type gameplay is just going to make us better and better and better.
Yep, don't disagree at all with that. There was one note I had earlier that was in the game side of things that I actually blew over, unfortunately, but it's an important one. When, say, timeouts are going on, a coach has delivered information to their team and then a coach grabs a player as they're walking back onto the court. What are your thoughts around this, Zoe? And I've loaded the gun for you because I know you have thoughts on this.
I'm not really a big fan of it.
Yep.
My thought process is that in that timeout, if I'm the head coach, I've used that to deliver the instruction that I want focused on. So I don't then need one athlete being pulled aside from that to then be given a different focus. Now, if it is to, if an athlete said, oh, I don't understand or where am I, go for it. No problem whatsoever. But adding to the instruction, I think is detrimental, mainly because I generally work off three instructions max. I don't think they can absorb any more than that. So you're now adding a fourth and probably number one is now dropped off the list. And so then who then gets in trouble for that? The athletes, because they're not doing what they were supposed to be doing. What we've all probably said it, we just spoke about it. So, you know, I think it's detrimental. Like I said, if it's answering a question, no problem, but yeah, I'm not really for it.
Yep. Coops, any different?
Not really. You know, as in, yeah, you can't add other information. Unfortunately, that's coming from a selfish place because you're now saying that what you had for the athlete was more important than what the head coach had. So just got to be really, really careful of that. And again, you know, Mike Dunlap, rule of three, you know, let's try and keep it really succinct. If it was so important, get it to the head coach.
Mm.
Yeah, yep. Get it to the head coach. Give them evidence as to why it's so important, and I'm sure that the head coach is going to, you know, do what they can to get it through the athletes. Answering a question 100%. Potentially reiterating the same information in another way, again, I would be open to, especially if we knew the athletes learned in certain ways or had a learning difficulty and knew that maybe a certain coach was articulated it differently, so I could see that being something, but yeah, just got to avoid that confusion by adding extra info.
Yeah, and start of the timeout is the best time to do that, obviously. So you get that sort of 10 seconds as the players are walking off the court to go to your head coach and say, hey, this is some really key information for our point guard, can you make sure you get it to him in the timeout? I don't know any coaches that'll sit there and say no, go away. Okay, cool, thanks.
Or even, you know, don't forget the power of peer-to-peer coaching. You know, so you know the timeout's coming. You've got a really good leader, you know, sitting next to you on the bench, someone you know that person connects really well with and respects. Give it to them. Hey, when Zoe comes off, can you just hit her with this? You know, this is going to help us be better, you know. And then it's that player's now got the responsibility. You get more, you know, peer-to-peer connection, which we know is, you know, peer-to-peer teams are always better than, you know, sorry, peer coach teams are always better than coach-led teams. And then now you are free of that piece of information to go to the head coach with the next most important piece. So, yeah, just something there that you could potentially tinker with.
And if you want to make sure you've got the time to get your message through to the head coach at the start of a timeout, be the one that brings them their whiteboard. Some people see
that. Coops doesn't want that. Coops wants his own whiteboard.
Some people see it as, no, what Coops doesn't, he doesn't expect you to give him
right.
his whiteboard.
But be proactive and get it to me.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's the thing, though. Some people see it as, you know, like you being you're the lowest on the totem pole because you've got to get the whiteboard.
Peel my grapes for me as you fan me off during this timeout. Like it's
but I know for a fact you used to get me my whiteboard to do two things. One, get your message to me, but two, calm me down if needed, because there are a couple times where I'd go to grab the whiteboard and you just hold on to it for a second and it just gave me a second to just take a breath. And so if you're worried that, oh, I don't have the time or they're not listening to me, grab the whiteboard and hand it to them. And in that interaction is where you start delivering your feedback or what you think should be included in that timeout.
Yeah, absolutely. There's tons of different ways you can do it. And I mean, one thing for me is you don't have to be the same as your head coach. You can think differently. You can act differently. Like we see it. The coaching tree is a really interesting one. You can usually tell which assistant coaches have worked with which head coaches because similar mannerisms, similar ways of talking. Just because you've worked with them once doesn't mean they are gospel and you have to do everything that way. Work with tons of different people if you can. If you can assist, if you have time, who does to be fair, but if you have time to assist two or three other coaches along the way, find what works for you as the assistant coach because not every head coach is going to want the same thing. Like I know I was watching a game not too long ago where the assistant coach came across as just really super arrogant. Like just the way they spoke, the way they sat, and it's like, yeah, I don't love this. And then sort of dig a little bit deeper on that, and it's like, ah, they've assisted coach A, B, and C. Okay, that's not necessarily their fault. They just potentially don't know any better. Like maybe they need to go and assist someone else that will give them a different type of role. So be you, no question. You don't have to be a carbon copy of the head coach though. Mm. So just be really mindful that, and in particular as an assistant coach, the way you sit on the bench can come across as really condescending. Like, and I'm aware that I'm doing it now. I'm leaning back in a chair with my legs crossed. Like, so apologies, everyone. This is why we don't film it, Zoe. But it can come across as really, I've checked out of this, I'm better than this, that sort of thing. So how you sit as an assistant coach, you want to be forward, you want to be engaged, you want to be making sure that you're touching base with everyone you need to touch base with, not just kicking back on the recliner.
And a really important part is don't feel like you've got the ability to gang up on the head coach with other assistant coaches. Yep. So I've had a situation where an assistant coach delivered a message of, I think you should take this particular player out of the game. And I said, not yet. I wanted to give her a few more possessions before making that rotation. And the assistant coach was fine, sat down, and the second assistant said, I agree with you. And there was a bit of a look over the shoulder. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if you agree with them or not. I now was, you know, I talk about my trust issues. I'm now, I don't trust a word you say now because of that single comment, which showed to me that, you know, you're willing to have that thought process of me as a coach, you know. So it's really important that your head coach knows you've got their back regardless and that, you know, and it's conversations head coaches have to have with assistant coaches of the end of the day, they've got to make calls that you may not like and don't take it personally. But the big part is don't take it personally and don't try and, you know, turn it around to a point where it's, you know, two against one or four against one or, you know, drag other assistant coaches into a, oh, we were right and you were wrong type because that won't end well for you.
Yeah. I think the body language piece is really important. Yeah, even just the way that you would walk back to the bench after giving the head coach, you know, some information. You know, just be really conscious of that, you know, and what sort of message you're delivering. So I think that's important. And then, yeah, just again, doubling down, you know, we've spoken about the language from Coach Krzyzewski that we borrowed, argue, agree, align. So, you know, that assistant coaches come up to you with a quote unquote argument, but it's, you know, it's feeble or, you know, a recommendation. So that's the argument. You said not yet. So that's okay. Well, we've agreed that, you know, here's the information. We've agreed that, yep, that needs to be considered, but not right now. And then the alignment has to happen. But that hasn't happened once the benches got back. We're still in that argument phase, and now we're in trouble. And, you know, exactly how you're feeling is like, oh, my God, you know, do I trust this person? So understanding to align. And then if you really are adamant, find other ways. Find other ways to go to a cold review, maybe a day or two later, go with film, go with stats, go with a clear head and have the conversations that you want to have with your head coach and do it the right way. But in game, like, you know, that example is just, yeah, it's just not on.
Yeah, and I do see a lot of director of coaches that are out there that go and assist their teams on a Friday night. So the head coach will usually still be the head coach, but the director of coaching will sit on the bench. Really important, you're not trying to take over. Like, you're an assistant in that role. As much as you're the director of coaching, you're still the assistant. Like, I know I had it on Friday night. I was on a bench. I sat there for the first quarter and said nothing, like, because I don't know the kids. I don't know their name. Like, I'm sitting there talking to the injured kid going, what's that kid's name? He's like, oh, this. Oh, cool. No worries. Like, I'm trying to work it out as I'm going. The coach comes to me and says, what do you got for me? I'm like, nothing. I know that kid's name is, like, Rex. Like, that's, I don't have much else for you at the moment. I don't know if this is how you would normally play or if it's different or whatever the case may be. So even if you're working with a coach, you might be a youth league coach and the senior team coach comes and sits on your bench. Great, but understand not to overstep. It's still not your team in that space. Now, as the second half went in, yes, I interfered. It's a fine line between the two at times. I had more input in the second half than I did in the first half, for sure. But it was also one of those things where it's like, well, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, if you just three-way switch that on-ball screen, this will work for you. Well, they've never done that. So why am I even offering that up in the first place? I think the assistant coach's job is to not reinvent the wheel. It's to find the wrinkle within something that you can now exploit offensively or defensively that can help the team there and now. That, I think that's more valuable, I suppose.
Yeah, 100%. I love that. And then I think, again, it goes back to assistant coaches is take on the challenge of knowing the stuff, knowing the system, knowing the style, knowing your head coach better than you could ever imagine so that you don't have to reinvent. You're like, oh, cool, yeah, well, if we just tweak that, we're going to have some success. And then that's really going to set you up to be the best assistant coach you can be, you know, higher, higher and higher.
Yep, absolutely. I think that's wrapped it up. It's an hour 20 on assistant coaches. It's been longest. Like, Rob Mason was the one that went for like an hour 40 a couple of years ago, but we're in COVID lockdown.
So, yeah.
Yeah, I think we were just pining to talk to anyone at that stage. So an hour 20 is a fair feat. It is something, though, like clubs, associations, please invest in your assistants, like, because they will eventually be your head coaches. Whilst it might be the same coaches to get the same teams every year and those types of things, they won't be around forever. So the more you can get assistant coaches, whether it be parents, whether it be siblings, whether it be young up-and-coming players involved, and you can put some time into developing them, the better off they're going to be. Like, I sort of joke about it a little bit, like when we go and do coaching courses. It's like, hey, who coaches the team? And just let me know what level you coach. And there's always one coach that says, yeah, I coach under 10s, under 14s, under 19s, and I assist this team over here. And it's like, suckers. Like, you know, but we want those people. Like, we need those people in the sport because, one, they're working on their craft. Two, there's like four teams that now have a coach because of that single person. But that's someone that clearly cares. So bring them in and try and give them a taste of a little bit higher. Like, give them more because they love it. Like, it's that dangerous part, I feel like, in our sport is almost when you finish under 18s, you're not sure about senior basketball yet, whether you want to jump into youth league or not. And it's like, actually, my Friday nights have been pretty nice, like not having to go to games. And, geez, Sunday mornings I can sleep in a little bit too, and we never get them back.
So don't let them
go in the first place. So it's that kind of thing, though. Like, find a way to keep them involved and keep them invested in it. Like, there's so many good things that I think that come from being an assistant coach early on. I honestly can't speak enough of it. And we've all been really lucky that we've been assistants to very good coaches and we've had very good assistant coaches in our careers as well. Yep. So it's a really valuable part of building a coaching network, I feel like, overall. So the more you can invest in that, I think the better off you're going to be. That does wrap us up for this week. Of course, you can get us on the @TalkingSplit Twitter handle and on Instagram. You can obviously still get us on our individual stuff. Coach NTB on Twitter for you, Coops. @ZCAR85.
Zoe Carr,
so close.
So close.
So close. And @RobColder on Twitter as well. Thank you very much for jumping into the podcast, everyone, and we will see you all next week. Look, tune in, enjoy the tribe.